Today we're going to talk about spiritual abuse. How do we see the warning signs in teachers? Why does spiritual abuse happen? And how you can lead a healthy spiritual life and avoid these issues. This is based on my personal experiences as a teacher and having met other teachers, and also my own journey with meditation, which has gone on now for nearly 10 years. This is a Deep Psychology podcast. I'm Ross. We blend spirituality, psychology, and self-help to help you shine a light on your inner workings. The insights I share have helped me deeply understand myself and transform my life. So listen to this podcast if you want real, powerful insights into yourself and to avoid all the fluffy nonsense that abounds in self-help circles. You'll know more about psychology than 99% of people out there. You can find me on all the major podcasting platforms or head to deep-psychology.com, which is visited by thousands every month for tons of free resources. Anyways, we all know that spiritual abuse happens. Spiritual teachers from all traditions, modern and old, have been known to abuse their power, abuse students in various ways, and in a certain way turn into dictators. And I won't go into details of specific people or specific cases. That's not really the point of this video. And I mention Bentinho Massaro in the title because I heard that he's been guilty of various things and is gone off the rails a bit recently, and I think there was some warning signs with him too, and you're going to see them right now. We're going to start with the warning signs. So if you have a spiritual teacher, or you're following someone on the internet, or you're going to classes, or you're going to retreats or whatever, how do you know in advance if someone is capable of physical or emotional abuse? And here are my 8 warning signs for you. The first is a certain detachment and indifference. So although they're teaching their students maybe meditation or maybe some kind of yoga or, I don't know, giving talks, it's sort of like they're a bit detached from their students. It's like they don't really care, or that they sort of dismiss problems. They dismiss ordinary problems and just tell you, just keep meditating, or when you become enlightened or whatever, then you won't have any problems. This is one warning sign. The next is making fantastical claims. And this is, Massaro does apply here, Bentinho Massaro. Apparently claimed that he can change the weather. I don't know, I've not actually heard, I've not read that or seen it anywhere, but apparently that is true. Things like this you really want to be careful of. It's not that that's a direct sign that they're going to necessarily abuse someone in some way, but it just shows that they're starting to sort of lose... they're just starting to lose their mind a little bit, basically. The next one, very closely related to the second, is claiming to be the next Messiah or Jesus, or to be bringing about some kind of spiritual revolution. Now, listen, people do bring about spiritual revolutions. That is absolutely true. It's when they sort of advertise it and they really believe it, and they're like, they have this total, they really believe that they are the best and they're going to like save the world with their form of spirituality or whatever. And the thing is that certain spiritual experiences, and I've had similar things, can actually trick you into believing that for a short time. Perhaps if something like that becomes more persistent, then they might genuinely believe that that's true, but it's not true. It's true that they might bring a spiritual revolution. Totally true. That happens in big ways and small ways. But it's the, as I said, it's making it into an identity and really sort of believing it and taking themselves extraordinarily seriously in a very unhealthy way. And I've seen it before and it's quite obvious. So look out. Fourth one, very related to the third one actually, is an inflated Machiavellian superiority complex. Now, I don't mean that they necessarily claim to be the next Messiah or Jesus, but they're just like so egotistical and so narcissistic that it's actually kind of revolting in a certain way. It's like, ah, they just believe they are the best and they can talk to anyone in any way they like, and they truly believe their own myth. That is an enormous warning sign right there, because if they put themselves on a pedestal so much, it's likely they put students and other people below them, and that means that they're capable of physical and emotional abuse, and they don't really value their students. They've sort of lost connection, and, well, I've seen it. I've seen this sort of superiority complex in several people, and it's really not healthy, and it's not very wise or spiritual either. Fifth one, focusing on profound states and nothing else. So, obviously, spirituality is about, ultimately about enlightenment, about discovering what's called clear light in Buddhism. It's called clear light or the Dharmakaya. It's about seeing the true nature of mind and of reality and of who you are. And it sounds very sexy and wonderful, but, you know, if that's all they focus on, if that seems like that's their entire life and they've got nothing else going on and they sort of lock themselves in that little bubble, that's not very healthy at all. And it's kind of a warning sign that their spirituality is taking over their entire life, and that, you know, is a sign that they're sort of losing contact with ordinary human life, and that is not a good sign for anyone. Next one, over-idealizing enlightenment and lulling students with sexy language. You know, this is kind of similar to the previous one, except the previous one's more about hiding in that little cave. This one is more about just, you know, how do they brand it? How do they talk about it? Do they talk about it as this almost amazing thing ever, and it's going to like liberate you and you're never going to suffer and, oh, everyone's going to love you and admire you and you're going to be this wonderful human being? No. It's not going to happen. I guess one of the problems with spirituality is that the language is very sexy. Enlightenment, awakening, awareness, presence, clarity, clear light. And then you've got all the, you've got the Sanskrit words and the Tibetan words and whatever other languages that you come across. And it all sounds really wonderful and amazing. And that's not to deny the wonder of it. But don't get lost in that. And if your teachers are getting lost in that, it's not a great sign, especially if it seems like that's the only thing they've got going on, and they totally over-idealize the thing that they're teaching. And this is closely related to the next warning sign, which is not admitting their own shortcomings and their basic earthly humanness. If they claim to be this perfect person, and they claim never to get angry, and they claim never to have problems in their life, and never to suffer, and that, my spiritual practice has transformed me forever and everything's amazing. And you can see that they maybe have some certain issues, or you intuit that, and they don't even sort of mention them, or they don't even admit that issues and problems and pain and suffering are real. Yeah, that's kind of a warning sign. Another sign that they're losing their connection to real life and their own bodies, I might imagine, their own bodies and minds, and they're just they're moving into a place that's not very healthy. Another one is having no boundaries with students, like, you know, I don't know, meeting up with students all the time, making jokes that aren't appropriate, innuendos, that kind of thing, just subtle things, but things that, if repeated often enough, really, they don't create enough of a boundary and a sense of student-teacher, like a sense of hierarchy, not in a repressive way, but just in a way that is healthy in it. It's almost like a doctor-patient relationship. A doctor doesn't do certain things with their patients for good reason, because it's to maintain a sort of professional relationship. And this is a different thing, but I think there does need to be that bit of separation there, and that bit of need to be some clear boundaries involved. And if that is repetitively not the case with a lot of students, yeah, could be a warning sign. Perhaps not. Maybe they're just very warm, compassionate people, and maybe they want to spend time with their students, and maybe they're, you know, maybe sometimes they say certain things that come out the wrong way. I don't know. But, you know, be careful. Use your inner wisdom there and see if this lack of boundaries is actually, verging into something that's unhealthy rather than something that's just friendly and compassionate. Bonus sign. And this one is kind of a bit tongue-in-cheek, but also very true. And it's something that you can't really put into words. Do they have a bad vibe? Do they give off bad energy? Do you just feel like something is wrong? You know, sometimes it's not going to be so obvious what their darkness is, or what issues they have in their spiritual lives or in their personal lives. But it's just that they give off a certain, I don't know, there's something there that you just don't like. And it, not just you, you're not the only one to see it. Other people see it and they're just like, ah, there's something there. Bit of a warning sign, that one. Or it can be. You know, you have to use your intuition here. You have to use your own life experience and make your own decisions. But I find that sometimes if I just feel that something isn't right, it probably isn't right in a way. So what causes spiritual abuse? I've talked about the warning signs, and you can use these, you know, very practically starting today. If you're in part of some sort of spiritual community, you're reading books or you're following some teachers. But what actually causes it? And I don't say this, I think sometimes people get naive about spiritual teachers, and and this is actually one of the causes, but we'll get to that. People over-idealize spirituality and spiritual teachers, and they think that they shouldn't be capable of harming anyone because they're enlightened and they love everyone unconditionally and all of this. And it's really not very realistic. But also, I'm not condoning abuse here, I really am. I'm just saying that spiritual teachers aren't perfect. None of them are perfect. But how does it go from our basic imperfection as a human to actually causing abuse to people that in other circumstances you would never happen? I think first cause is quite simple, is that they get the opportunity to. You know, you're spending time with someone, sometimes it's one-to-one, sometimes it's in a retreat situation. You know, you're around people who admire you. And that, you know, they get the opportunity to do certain things, you know, and one thing leads to another, and all of a sudden there's a scandal comes out. And I think part of it is just that, you get the opportunity to, whereas in other areas of life, you wouldn't, for example, spend a week in the countryside with a teacher and students. It just, when does that happen? Apart from in spirituality, not very often. And I think that's part of the issue. The second cause for me is they don't develop the bodhisattva enough. And it's funny because I've learned from teachers who've abused people in various ways, who talk about, and those people have talked about the bodhisattva vow and achieve, you know, walking the spiritual path for others as much as you or even more than you, vowing to never harm other people, vowing to always use your knowledge and wisdom to benefit other people. And I think that is actually it's kind of an innate thing that we all have. I don't just mean spiritual teachers. I mean, all human beings have it. It's this innate love that goes beyond like interpersonal conflict and our personal history with other people. This is what we work on in loving kindness and, or compassion meditation. But they've maybe just not developed it enough. They've not really like made that their go-to identity, and their lower identities are still too powerful for them to overcome. And when they get the opportunity, well, those other identities are going to take over. The next reason, and this is possibly the one of the biggest ones, and this is not to blame students, because the teachers encourage this as well, is that students over-idealize teachers. We all over-idealize spirituality, enlightenment, the path, meditation, etc., and people involved in teaching it. And I think this gets transferred onto the teachers. You know, if we over-idealize something and then we are learning from someone who's teaching that, inevitably we're going to over-idealize the person. And we start seeing a person who isn't really there in a certain way. We sort of give strange justifications for their their dark side and their, you know, the weak parts of their personality. And in a certain way, we fall in love with our teacher. And we also project all our brilliance onto them. And I think eventually teachers fall for this a little bit. They get so used to getting patted on the back that they start patting themselves on the back, and it just goes into this cycle where they really start to believe their own myth. And I think that must be a cause of physical and emotional abuse, because teachers eventually just, I don't know, they end up feeling superior to other people, and the people around them actually believe that in a certain way. Closely related to this, forgetting they're some guy or some girl. Yeah, listen, one thing I've realized in my life, I don't want to digress too much. One thing I've realized in my life recently is all the people that I've admired throughout my life, whether it's musicians or scientists or meditators or whoever it is, despite what they achieved, despite perhaps how rich and popular they've become, and despite the success they've had, they're just some guy, or they're just some girl. They're not who we think they are. They're just us. They're just the same as us in a certain way, except in one specific area they've excelled, and they've reached the top 1% or the top 5% or whatever it is. Underneath all that, they're just some guy, they're just some girl. And it's so true in spirituality. No matter how much you realize about yourself and how much you see beyond the illusion of this separate, caged ego, and no matter how much you feel an affinity, a lived, felt affinity with everything that you're experiencing, you have to always remember you're just some guy or just some girl. You're not special. There's 8 billion of us on the planet right now. You know, don't take yourself too seriously. Even if you're a llama or whatever, you've got certificates or you've done X amount of meditation or you've learned from this teacher, you've been on these retreats. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You're just some guy or some girl that's spiritually advanced. That's it. Don't take yourself too seriously. And it's tempting, spirituality is especially tempting, to be a means to take yourself too seriously. But I think humility and ethics and a basic awareness of the bigger picture of things is very important when you're doing these things. A next cause is trauma and a sense of inferiority. So what I find basically in life in general is that, again, I don't want to digress too much. I could talk about this for an entire episode. But basically, as human beings, what we do is we hide the parts of our personality we don't like by accentuating the opposite. So let's say I'm a man And I feel quite feminine, but I don't accept that. I don't like that fact. Maybe someone bullied me for being too feminine, or maybe I just got the idea that I shouldn't be feminine, or I do it to fit in, whatever. What I'm going to do is I'm going to behave more like a macho man, you know, in all the ways that manifests itself. I'm going to exaggerate that side of my personality. I'm going to exaggerate those traits to hide to others, and in a certain way to myself, this femininity. And that's just an example. The femininity is not really related to this, but this, when you get teachers with this sort of inflated superiority complex, this sort of Machiavellian thing, I actually think it's deep lack of self-love and self-confidence. Not always, but a lot of the time. It's actually a deep sense of inferiority. The most narcissistic people I know, I wouldn't say I would get in a fight with them because I'm pretty sure they would tear my head off, but when I look beyond their words and beyond their grand, they're sort of in this inflated grandiosity and how they are cynical and how they dismiss other people, how they ridicule other people. When I look beyond that into their heart, into their true, who they really are on the inside, I realize that they're actually pretty empty and weak. I don't say that to be horrible, but it's true, and it's very sad, actually. And so what I think happens with spiritual teachers is that often they have this sense of inferiority inside them, or they have trauma from the past and that's related to that. And when they get into this position of power, it's not so much that the sense of inferiority goes away, it's sort of like they have to act out this powerful personality to keep a lid on that sense of inferiority. And it's maybe just a plain case of they've just simply not faced that and come to accept that they have this sense of inferiority. And yeah, this leads them into all kinds of behavior that they act like a dictator and they don't treat people with respect and so on. I think that's definitely a cause. Another cause, which is more sort of bureaucratic in nature, is spirituality isn't really regulated. Outside the traditional lineages, like if you become a monk in some sort of Buddhist lineage, for example, you know, there's training involved. You're not just going to be given a title after walking in there. You can't just call yourself a Zen master. You need to be officially, you need to be given that title. You need to go through the training. Outside of that, you can't do a degree in spirituality. You can't say, I've got a Bachelor of Science in spiritual enlightenment or in whatever. I mean, that's kind of changing because you can actually do certain things at university, but the actual title of spiritual teacher, it's not like becoming a maths teacher or whatever. It's where you have to go through training. You can't just turn up in a school and start teaching. Spirituality isn't like that. A lot of teachers work online. They are self-employed. They've got their own business, their own company, and they run their own events and whatnot. There's no way of regulating it. And if you have an audience and you have reach, you can basically teach whatever you want. And yeah, that leaves the door open for people who have not so altruistic desires and motivations for what they're doing. And yeah, I think that's definitely a cause. It'll be interesting to see if that changes at some point. Another one is hidden motivations and needs that they haven't taken care of in other ways. For example, motivations for power, wealth, and fame. So, yeah, I think a lot of the time it's just they come in, they start being a spiritual teacher, possibly because of some genuinely benevolent motive. But what happens when they actually do that and they gain some sort of following and people start listening to them and calling them wise and admiring them is that all these hidden, these sort of more developmentally basic, shall we say, needs and motivations come out. Their need for power, their need for wealth, their need for fame. And then that starts motivating them, but they just don't really seem to realise it. And then by the time they've accumulated a lot of power, it's kind of too late for them to realise. Finally, power can corrupt, and the corrupt often attain power. Yeah, I think power can corrupt in a certain way, and it brings out parts of ourselves that we maybe aren't aware of, as I said in the previous cause. And, you know, we get the admiration, and we get, you know, we even maybe make a career out of it, and we just start taking ourselves too seriously, and we start doing things that aren't so ethical, and that if we didn't have that amount of power, that we wouldn't do. But, you know, that happens in all spheres, and I think spirituality is another potential sphere for that to happen. The corrupt often attain power. As I said, people can tell you whatever they want, their motivations for being a spiritual teacher, but maybe in a certain way they just want power, and they just want authority over people, and they just want to feel superior. And then, you know, as happens in a lot of other spheres, they eventually get the power that they're so desperate for. So, to finish off, I wanted to give you some tips for a healthy spiritual life and a healthy relationship to spiritual leaders. Keep these in mind. These are very crucial. Don't deny your problems. Your problems have nothing to do with spirituality, financial, relationship, behavioural, etc. Don't over-idealise spirituality. Don't even speak about spirituality. Live it with every breath. Go to your direct experience, not to your fantasies about non-duality and enlightenment and bliss. Live it. Feel it. Be it. Embody it. Get a life. Sounds kind of harsh, but life is about much more than just getting enlightened and reading spiritual books. Learn from healthy, advanced practitioners who don't show the warning signs. Kind of obvious, but really important. Be prepared to let go of your gurus and to go beyond them. They're just sharing what they know, and maybe eventually you'll go beyond them. And if they doesn't resonate, move on. Like, don't put them on this pedestal. Use their teachings, use their wisdom to guide your path, but don't make them into the savior of your life. Always remember that you're just some guy or girl. It doesn't matter what other people say. It doesn't matter how far you go in your spiritual journey. You're not a saint, even if you are a saint. I mean that sort of tongue in cheek. You're not a Buddha. You're not a guru. You're just some guy or some girl. And you're just one of the other 8 billion humans on this planet. And finally, let spirituality inform the rest of your life, not hijack the rest of your life. Okay, I'm Ross. It's time to go. If you like this episode, subscribe to my podcast for more. I've got new episodes every week. And make sure to check out deep-psychology.com. I've got plenty of resources on meditation and spirituality if you digged this video. Take care, and I'll see you soon.